Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 per hour plus a $175 weekly bonus for some shifts. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Bet River Sportsbook has supercharged its iOS app. Download the update today from the Apple App Store and see the difference for yourself. Must be 21 or over to play. Playable only in Indiana. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
Everybody, to Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel. And as soon as Pratt gets his headset on, he'll join the show. That's the problem with this. We start talking and we forget we're supposed to be doing a radio show. Oh, good morning, everybody. It's Thursday morning. Sun's out. Hopefully the winter weather is behind us. And although, Michael, Saturday it's supposed to rain, 90% chance of rain on Saturday. And, of course, Saturday is a big work day for Kentucky Derby horses.
Probably the last one.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. But and these trainers, because these three-year-olds are getting ready to go to a mile and a quarter, which they've never done in their lives, these trainers would much rather work a day early than a day late. So all these Derby trainers will have one eye on their horse, one eye on the Weather Channel, and I wouldn't be surprised if it looks like it's going to rain Saturday morning. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of these Derby works don't come in tomorrow morning.
Oh, really? Instead
of waiting for Sunday or Monday. So pretty quiet on the Derby front yesterday and the Oaks front. Most of the horses just gallop, but activity will really pick up starting tomorrow morning.
And we've talked Derby. What we haven't talked much was the Oaks with the fillies.
Yep.
Have you – I have not even – You know what? And I bring that up because I couldn't tell you a filly. I could tell you who's running in the Derby and things about them, but I've blown by the Oaks, man.
Well, we saw when we were at Keeneland on Bluegrass Day, we saw the filly that's probably going to be the favorite, and that's Malatat.
That's the only one, but I forgot about her too. I've just blown through it.
Brad Cox, who we've talked about a lot, and hopefully we'll have him on early next week, he will have maybe the second choice, a filly named Travel Column, who won the Fairground Oaks in her last prep. And Asmussen has got like three fillies that have a shot of winning the Oaks. And then Chad Brown, who we've talked a lot about. He has an undefeated filly that's coming in for the Oaks. I think the Oaks is going to be very, very competitive. And though Malatat will be the favorite, I think there'll be some really nice prices in the Oaks field.
I was going to ask you, being really interested in the gaming opportunities you gave me, I was listening
to you. Wait a second.
You
can bet on these?
Yeah. Every now and then, if you go down the corner, the guy holding some slips, and he writes your number on a slip and gives it to you. That's how you can bet on it. Yeah. Well, a couple things I wanted to bring up. I had been, first of all, let's, Bobby V, I believe, is coming back following us today at noon for the show, and
that's
terrific.
That's great news.
And we also, being having been for a while a board member of Kentucky and a Friends of V, since he announced what his situation was, we've had some great donations.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah,
we've had some great donations. We had a Zoom yesterday morning, and he was talking about it. So all those folks out there that love Bobby V and appreciate what he's done, and they've contributed to the Kentucky and Friends of V, thank you very much. Myself.
How would somebody go about that if they haven't donated yet and would like to?
Go to the website, Kentucky and Friends of V, you can start right there and
great, and
do what you need to do. Or we're going to have a couple opportunities in the summer and the fall, event-type things, auction. I got a couple nice things to auction up. We'll get you to auction off a ball or something that you signed. So we got wiped out last year like everybody else. We made all of our commitments, okay, to charities around or foundations, charities around Kentucky. J. Graham Brown and up in Lexington at the Marquee. We gave some money to Dickie V's deal in Tampa. So we're kind of starting from scratch this year, but we're on target. And we're going to have Bobby V back tomorrow, and I think he'll be – he told me he was hopefully to do a Fast Break Friday after our show on Friday.
Great. So it'll be great to have him back. That's terrific news.
It certainly will. Now, process, I want you to hang with me on this, okay? Now, Jack Nicholson turned 84 today, okay?
Yep.
So what I think I love Jack Nicholson.
You can't handle the truth.
Two Jakes. I mean, you go on and on. I mean, I've seen so many of them, but he turned 84. And also Luther Vandross turned 70 if you're into some jazz. But Nicholson, we're going to put up a poll, a Twitter poll. Okay. Which movies, Nicholson movies, are your favorites?
Okay.
And we'll go through a few here, and you can we'll pick out. Of course, A Few Good Men has got to be one. Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. So
absolutely.
What's your favorite? Are you on to the Few Good Men?
Yeah. What was the one that he loved with a younger woman? What's the name of that one?
As good as it gets.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the one.
You like that one?
Yeah. Let me tell you my favorite Jack Nicholson story. Jack Nicholson is a huge Laker fan.
Oh, yeah.
And for years and years and years in the Forum, his seats were right next to the visitor's bench. And so we're playing the Lakers one night, and I'm kneeling down in front of the bench, but I'm actually kneeling down right in front of Jack Nicholson. And so we're getting killed. I mean, absolutely killed. And I turn around and I say, Jack, is acting easier than coaching? He says to me, Danny, there isn't anything easier than acting.
That's beautiful. Batman, I like the Departed. And here's one. I thought he did a nice job in Hoffa, where he played Hoffa. And, of course, the Two Jakes, I enjoyed that one. I saw that the other day.
What about like The Shining? Come on.
Process, huh? Oh, The Shining, yeah.
There we go. We got to mention that.
Put The Shining in there, okay? A Few Good Men. Yes, you got one?
The one you just mentioned, As Good As It Gets.
As Good As It Gets. And then how about the one we're down to Batman, okay? And or we are... No, the one you're thinking about is Something's Got to Give. Hmm. Scratch that. Something's Got to Give is the one you're thinking about.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
With the mother and the daughter.
Right.
How about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Oh, yeah. There you go.
So what's on our list now, Process?
We're going to go with A Few Good Men, The Shining, Something's Got to Give, and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Okay. All
perfect.
Right. That is perfect. That is perfect. That's a good story. I remember the first time we came to L.A. when I went on the bench, and we weren't any good. We're an expansion team. And so you sit there, and I don't know why he came out to see an expansion team play the Lakers as good as they were.
There was a time he was there every night. It didn't matter who the Lakers. Now, lately I've noted, well, of course, the last couple of years, nobody's been there. But even prior to that, he wasn't there as often as he was, but there was a stretch of many years where he didn't miss a Lakers game.
Gene Littles was the coach of Terry Coughler, who was a trainer at Xavier, and they hired him to be the trainer at with the original Hornets, and I think he lasted 12, 15 years, and he's retired now. But I hear all this chirping. I mean, you know, hey, Gene, sit down, oh, blah, 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 you know, and then he knew Terry's name. He'd chirp at Terry, and I just looked down there and said, what in the world? Who would be doing all that chirping when you're up 25 in the first quarter, you know? Oh, he was something, man.
He's a piece of work.
Now, I do have one that's probably in your wheelhouse. Do you know who Tempest Storm is?
Tempest? Now, I'm old, but not that old.
She danced. She performed the burlesque. Right. We're not talking about stripping.
Right.
We're talking about burlesque.
Yeah.
And she performed into her 80s, and she passed the other day at 93.
Oh, God bless her.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought maybe you'd remember her from someplace along the line.
No, I never had the opportunity to run into a Tempest Storm.
Oh, Lordy. Well, you get to the pro hoops, man. Kentucky guys were on fire last night.
Isn't that unbelievable? You talked about it the other day. Julius Randle's got to be the most improved player in the league. Man, is he on a run. What did he have, 40 last night?
I believe so.
Yeah.
And he's had a couple 40s, some 30s. He did have that streak broken. But he's expanded his game. And you look at him and Bam coming off not only a game winner with Miami, he was playing big last night for the Heat,
mm-hmm.
big numbers. There's a guy that's expanded his offensive game, and Randle has too. And you got to give him a lot of credit because it's not like they just go wake up in the morning, get a bowl of cereal, and there's my expanded offensive
game.
Exactly. Right?
Takes a lot of work, a lot of work.
And you got to give both of those guys a lot of credit for that. And Nerlens Noel has seemed to find a home. He'd been passed around a little bit, but he's become, with the Knicks, a quality rim protector.
Mm-hmm.
And then my man, quickly, and I've said this before, all the pro guys that we would talk to last year, and I just like this kid for his fortitude. And I told him, I said, you're missing it. I mean, if you want a kid, and I never said he would be a star or a starter. I said, he's going to be a rotation player.
Yeah.
I said, I guarantee you'd be. And here's why. I told him, I said, you some guys sign and they just go away or they don't work real hard. This kid will work hard. I mean, he showed me that. He was down and out, okay, after his freshman year. And all of a sudden, his sophomore year, he caught fire because of all the work he did. And he was one of those guys at practice that caught your attention because of how hard they practiced. And he's been on a roll. He had a big trade last night. For the Knicks, they've won 8 in a row. Give us your thoughts on how hard is it to put a string together of 8 or 10 in a row?
Yeah, it's unless you're the best team in the league.
Throw them out,
and that's easy. And of course, the opponents. I mean, that's the first thing that I used to do when the schedule came out. Is to look and see when we play teams that I thought we could beat, and not only at home but on the road too. So the schedule has a lot to do with it, but it's very, very difficult because you're playing so many games, and it's just to keep your game at that level, playing as often as you do. You're going to have nights where you try hard, but it just doesn't work out. And sometimes you have two or three or better players have those kinds of nights at the same time. So no matter what the competition is, to win 8 games in a row, and the Knicks have been down for so long, and the NBA loves it because that's the mecca. That's always been the mecca, Madison Square Garden, and for the NBA, the home office is there. And so they love it. When the Knicks are good, and so I'm sure that the NBA front office is delighted that the Knicks have become relevant again,
and they probably will be even more delighted when Zion Williamson gets to the Knicks. Right, he's a politicking to go. Well, I love Madison Square Garden. I can play here every game. You know,
there's still a lot of people those people that, have the aluminum foil on their heads and think that everything is fixed. But there's still a lot of people who think the draft lottery was fixed the year that the Knicks got Patrick Ewing because they didn't have the biggest chance to get him. And a lot of people still believe that it was fixed that Ewing went to the Knicks.
They froze the envelope, man. It was a fixed job, totally.
Process.
I believe that completely. Why would the NBA not want their biggest franchise to not have the mammoth that was Patrick Ewing?
That's a fair point.
But you think they would cheat to do it?
It wouldn't shock me. I mean, you need the Knicks to win. I mean, they haven't won since, you know, early 70s, but put a player like Patrick Ewing in there, a transformative player in there, of course they fixed it. That's one of the few conspiracy theories I believe.
There's our man with the aluminum foil on his head.
Well, no, you know, the NBA has probably never been better. And I say that, and somebody could correct me. Probably never been better when both the Lakers and the Knicks and the Celtics, those three are the cornerstone of the NBA. Right. Two of those three have to be good.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right because, you know, they hate it when, you know, Utah or Portland or Seattle gets to the finals because, you know, there aren't enough people in those time zones to even affect the rating numbers. So you're absolutely right. They love it when big market teams are the better teams in the league.
We were in, I think it was, it might have been my our first year on the bench. I'm trying to think. We had J.R. Reed, okay, as our pick.
Was he your first pick?
Yeah, he was. No, Rex was our first pick.
Really?
Rex was picked at number 7 or 8. Yeah. J.R. came.
So you, as an expansion team, you didn't get the first pick?
No. We lost it to Miami 1 year, I believe it was, Orlando 1 year. They finally got the number one pick when they drafted Larry Johnson, and I was on my way out. Okay. And then the next year they got Alonzo Mourning. What kind of steal was this?
Yeah.
With the second pick.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, what kind of steal was that?
Of course, the first pick was pretty good too. I think his name was Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. I mean, but you know, you knew Shaquille was going to be Shaquille. I mean, come on. If the people that said they didn't think he was going to be a good pro, they got the tinfoil on their head, right, as you say. But Mourning, I mean, you get a guy that could influence the outcome of the game without question. There's been some second-round picks that people go like, well, you know, maybe. But not with that kid.
Yeah.
And he was – but anyway, we're playing the Knicks. It was the second year because we took Kendall Gill, who was really a quality player and a quality guy. We took JR. We're an expansion team. The Knicks were pretty good. They had Patrick and, you know, they were a playoff team. Before the game, we decided that we would challenge JR to defensively to do something.
To step up his game.
Yeah. So Gene challenged him and put him on Patrick Ewing. And we said, look, Patrick, he's going to go to the baseline and he's going to turn right. And he's got that short corner baseline, or he's going to post you up at the block. That's where Patrick's going to play, right? Okay. Patrick goes for 52 and laughed at JR. He asked to come out in the third quarter. He was getting his, you know what, handed to him. You know, and Ewing could do that. I mean, if you let him go right or you let him sit right on that block, oh, my God. He was good, and he just – it might have hurt JR's confidence at that point.
Well, I was going to say that sounds like poor coaching to me. I mean, if you're going to challenge –
I'm just the assistant,
man. If you're going to challenge him, I mean, and Patrick goes for 52, that wasn't a very good challenge.
But I will say this, again, as assistant coach, there were quite a few guys that went for 50 against us that year. 40 to 50. There were plenty of guys that went against us. But, Hero, Tyler Hero. There's been some things written I read recently about they being some people in Miami that gas bags like us that said, okay, I think Hero's spending too much time doing, I think they got a Tyler Hero Fruit Loop cereal or something. He's dating a model. And they think he was paying too much attention to the off the court issues.
You sent that article
to me. I did, didn't I?
And, you know, that can happen. You've seen it happen to a lot of good players where, you know, the celebrity status, they start believing that stuff themselves, and it can really affect their game. But he hasn't fallen off that much, has he?
Well, some of his shooting numbers have. Okay. Some of his shooting numbers have, and I guess they've been – critical of his defense, but they have such a good culture down there. I can't see him going too far from the team room.
No.
Because that culture will pull you back in.
Absolutely. They'll grab him and bring him back in. One of the things, Mike, besides him having a good time, one of the things that might be affecting that shoot, those shooting numbers, are the fact that people now know what he can do.
Sure.
And they have opponents that are challenging people to go out there and stop Tyler Hero too.
And they were in the championship game against the Lakers last year, right? In the bubble NBA.
You know, the East is going to be really interesting come playoff time, and the playoffs start I think the third week in May. So we're not
16 games left. Something like
yeah, that. we're not that far from the playoffs. But did you see that Steve Nash said that Harden had a setback with his hamstring injury, and that they were starting at square one with his rehabilitation? And you know Durant's hurt, a lot of the time. And of course, Kyrie Irving, he's taken personal days to a whole new level. So, but if they don't have Harden has become, and when they made that trade, I didn't know if Harden was really going to be able to fit in with those other two players, because he in Houston, he was a player that had to have the ball. That's why he wanted out of Oklahoma City when Westbrook and Durant were there. Because he was a player who wants to have the ball, dominate the ball. But since going to Brooklyn, he has done a phenomenal job of distributing the ball and getting the other players involved. And I think he's a real key. And if they don't have him in the playoffs, that I think the Nets are like the third or fourth choice in the East after that. So the playoffs are going to be real interesting in the NBA, because everybody knows how loaded the Western Conference is, and a couple of unsuspecting teams are playing really well. Hopefully Donovan Mitchell's injury isn't too bad, and he's back in the lineup. But Utah is playing terrific, and Phoenix Suns.
Oh man, they're on a roll, aren't they?
They beat the 76ers last night, and Booker is playing well. But I've said this for years, the one player in the NBA that I really enjoy watching play is Chris Paul, because Chris Paul knows how to play the game. I mean, he's just not a talented guy out there that's getting 20 points a game, because it's going to be a lot of fun.
And a new structure to the playoffs. And to your point about Chris Paul, I was reading this morning, he's got, over the last 2 weeks or so, he's got 111 assists in like 10 turnovers.
Yeah.
Crazy number.
His turnover to assist ratios off the charts.
And he's what, 35? I mean, yeah. You know, yeah. He's been doing this for a long time, but I mean, at that age, to be able to do that and withstand the travel and the pressure and all those things to deliver like that. Yeah, he's still got it.
And I left one team out that I think is gonna be a big player in the West, and that's the Denver Nuggets.
I was wondering if you were going there. Jokic?
Losing Murray hurts. There's no question about it. But Porter Jr., he has become a much better player than I ever thought he would be. But
I agree.
You've got the big MVP candidate in the middle, Nikola Jokic. And so it's – yeah, the playoffs will be a lot of fun this year.
And Steph Curry streak ends at 11, 30-plus points last night. Got a little chilly and had 18. Which would be enough for a mere mortal shooter. But he's got such great range and such confidence. And on a team that's a lot of injuries, a lot of problems for whatever those things are, they're close. There's a chance they could ease into the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. And another thing, going back to last night's game when they got beat by Washington, that was the fifth road game of a 5-game trip. So that's one of the problems with the West Coast teams and the East Coast teams. They have to go to the other conference sometimes for 10 days, 2 weeks. So the Warriors had been on the road for quite a while, and that was their fifth road game back east. So you can understand why Steph might have been just a little tired.
Yeah, his arm was iced down before halftime and afterwards. But saying that, process, did you get the call from Dan about the 5 games on the road? I don't know what the number was, but did he call you so we could make our bet? mean, that's what people look at in the NBA. They look at, if you're a bettor, you look at things like that, right? Did you get that call?
Here's the deal. Here's the deal with the phone. We're working on it. It's busted. I can't hear them until I pod them through. So I basically have to guess what they're saying.
Well,
we're working on
it. What the heck did that have to do with what Mike just asked?
Did you just ask if I got a call?
No, from him about betting against Golden State because that's their fifth road game in a row in their, you know, West Coast.
Well, now I'm just like an idiot. I'm sorry. No, I'm working on putting out fires over here. What's up? All right. Let's mark this down.
Beautiful process.
It's something, man. It's something. God, that's a shame. That is a damn shame. Continue.
We are going to have our good friend Rusty Arnold at 10:30, and we'll probably jump off here so we can get him on. But saying that, Dan, a lot of rumors about coaching changes at Kentucky, a lot of things to talk about as far as elevation of assistants, because U of L elevated a fellow from, I think he was on the player personnel side, I'm not quite sure, to full-time assistant. And we look across the landscape, a lot of assistants got really good jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's quite something that's happening.
You know, a lot of people, Mike, just given the opportunity, can really work hard and rise to the top. The best example of that I saw is Mike Brown, who is now assistant coach with the Golden State Warriors, was head coach at Cleveland and someplace else.
Was he not at Philly?
Was he at Philly? Sure. But he was at Cleveland. Now he's with the Warriors. Mike Brown started when I was coaching the Nuggets in the early 90s. Mike Brown started as our video guy. Yep.
And, a lot of guys started
The only reason he got that job was Bernie Bickerstaff was our general manager at the time. And Bernie had gone to San Diego, or San Diego State, one of those two. And Mike was a player and a student at San Diego. And he wrote Bernie this really nice letter asking for a position. Bernie gave him the video coordinator's job. And, you know, he becomes a head coach in the NBA. So I really like it when these guys that are willing to work hard and take advantage of whatever little edge they get and can move right up the ladder. I think that's always terrific. I like it when programs promote from within rather than going out and trying to get the hottest assistant, whoever that might be.
I agree. I think it's a reward that is deserved by some, and some don't get to that opportunity, but a lot of them do. And it's very hard to move from a video coordinator or a portal coordinator, whatever it is, that into a coaching position, which most guys want to do.
Yeah. Well, I think that's, you know, if you get involved in that side of the business, you know, if your goal isn't to be a head coach at some point, then, you know, you're probably never going to be successful at it.
Well, you've got to have that goal to be a head coach, because that's a long shot. But if you're reaching toward it, you might end up with a really nice assistant slot someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being a assistant either in the NBA on a good team. Now, it wasn't a great experience on a expansion team, but on a good team or in a top 25, top 50 college team, being an assistant, it's a pretty good job.
Yeah. And, you know, in the NBA, I mean, every team now has like an assistant coach for every player. I mean, you look at the NBA bench and there's three assistants. You can have three assistant coaches on the bench. But then you look behind the bench, and there's 14 guys in.
It's like going to the movies. You get them all back there in chairs. All right, Process wants us to take a break, and he also can keep us informed on the text line, right? And next half hour, we have Rusty Arnold.
Yep, Rusty Arnold's going to come on and talk about horse racing and the Kentucky Derby and his career, and it'll be a good one.
You're locked on Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
And welcome back to Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel. Mike, we're pleased to be joined on the hotline by an extraordinary horseman and a good friend of ours, Rusty Arnold. Rusty, are you staying warm this morning?
Yeah, because I'm sitting in a truck now, so it's warmed up now.
You know where to go when it gets cold, don't you?
I imagine it was a little cold at the barn early this morning, wasn't it?
It was cold. Not near as bad as yesterday, but it was cold.
Okay. Rusty, of course, grew up in Lexington. His father, George Sr., was a trainer. Was there ever a time you were going to do anything but train horses, Rusty?
Well, when I went to UK, I envisioned being a veterinarian, and when I found out after a couple of years that I wasn't smart enough or dedicated enough, I reverted back to training horses. So then I've stuck with that for 40-some years.
And of course, you're a huge UK fan, but I've known for a long, long time Louis Dampier's your favorite player, but you told me the other day Pratt was your second favorite player, so I don't know how much attention you've been paying to that.
Well, I had to throw that to Dan just because he always knew I was a crazy Louis Dampier fan because I wore his number when I was in grade school and everything, and it's kind of been an on-running joke between us two. So I think he would actually be my second favorite, Dan, but I just didn't want it to swell his head.
Well, you broke my heart, Rusty. Good Lord. That's one thing I could lord over him, that you had me as number two behind sweet shooting Louis Dampier. Now, let me ask you this, since you wore his number, how did your shot work out? I mean, you wear his number, you got to shoot it like he does.
Well, at that stage when I was in grade school, I thought I was a really good shot. As I got older and I was short and slow and they blocked it, it wasn't so good. So I had to move on from that sport too.
Rusty, I want to go back a little ways. Do you remember the first horse you ever trained for me?
Well, I got two of them. I know it was Miss Blueprint and Queen's Court Queen. I don't know if they came at the same time. You probably remember, but they were very close to the same time.
Yeah, Miss Blueprint. We had a fun night. Rusty was training at Turfway. I think it might have still been Latonia then, and he had a young jock that was coming out of New Mexico by the name of Mike Smith, who turned out to be a pretty decent rider. And we took Miss Blueprint to East St. Louis.
Fairmont Park
for a steak to get some. And I know Rusty, Miss Blueprint had to lay on her right side that night because Mike Smith hit her left-handed every step she took.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, but I think she got up. She won by just a nose or a head. It was close. We beat something of Spendthrift's, and he did. Mike was very, not known at all at the time, and Dan flew us down there, and we had a great night. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. That mare was by a horse called Architect that nobody ever heard of. She had terrible conformation. She was straight up and down in front. But, Rusty, I think we won five or six races with that mare.
Yeah, she won several. I think she won at Canterbury, won at Churchill, maybe even won a race at Keeneland. But she won several races. She ended up having several wins.
Yeah, I remember very dearly the win she had at Keeneland because Claiborne had a 3-5 shot in there, and Seth Hancock walked out of Keeneland kicking every trash can he can.
That'll happen to all of us. You get when you leave there, if you run enough of them, you'll leave there kicking the trash cans.
Rusty, you were born and raised to be, no matter what you say, you were going to be a trainer. Your dad was in Ohio in Kentucky on that circuit. And where did he run in Ohio? Did he run at the old River Downs and then go up to Columbus and places like
that?
Yeah,
my dad had a job. Actually, there was a farm right as you're going through Walton, Kentucky. I was raised there. Well, I say raised there. I lived there for about 5 years. It was called Ellis Farm, and he trained for them private, and his two spots were River Downs and Latonia at the time. And when they built Latonia, I remember I sent a picture to Mr. Bach, who runs it. He's a general manager now. I think my dad unloaded the first horses in there when they moved over from River Downs over to Latonia when they built the track. And I'm going to guess the year would have been, I don't know, somewhere around probably 50, early 50, 55. I forgot when it was built. And he pretty much stayed there, and then he bought his own farm in Lexington and moved to Lexington. And at that time, he just kind of trained out of Keeneland and would ship to different places. I think after he stabled at those two, he never stabled anywhere else, just here.
Talking about private trainers, Rusty, we had Vicki Oliver on Wednesday. She's hoping to be only the 18th woman ever to start a horse in the Kentucky Derby. But you were for a while, and still are, trainers for Watts and Sally Humphreys, and their business plan is to basically keep all the fillies and race them and sell all the colts. So for a while there, your barn was just full of fillies, not very many colts.
Yeah, it's kind of, you get it, you're a product of your environment, and then you get known as a filly trainer. But, you know, I've worked for Mr. Humphrey pretty almost 30 years. It's getting very close to 30 years, and we had, you know, 90% of them were fillies. We would keep a colt occasionally. It didn't sell right, or it had a medical condition, got hurt, didn't get sold. So we raised some colts, but pretty much we're all fillies. And, you know, he's filled my barn with a lot of nice fillies, actually. And I'm some of those generations now, I'm on the third and fourth generation of them, which is this was a pretty neat thing. When you know, one that comes to mind, if you don't mind talking about it, was Lett. We bought Lett together. She was either first or second crop of AP Indies, and she didn't win a grade one, but she placed in a couple of them. She just lost the Ashland by a short distance, and then she produced Center Court for me, who was a grade one winner at Keeneland, and who now has produced Navratilova, who was just third in a stake at Keeneland opening weekend. So what a family, and that's what he does. He just produces families and stays with them, and it's great stories.
Well, and you are having an absolute terrific meet at Keeneland. There's only a couple days left, but if I've got my numbers right, out of only 14 starters, you've had 4 winners, 3 seconds, 1 yesterday in a maiden race, and 3 thirds. And I know being a Central Kentucky guy, winning a race at Keeneland means a lot.
Yeah, you know, we like Keeneland. We try to probably use Keeneland and Churchill as a main focus of what we do. And for two reasons, we're here, we're from Kentucky, and, you know, the money has got really good here now. And we really strive to do well at those two meets, and we've been lucky this meet. What we've run has all run well. The horses came out of Florida doing good, and they've run well.
And today, now, Keeneland has had these baby races, these two-year-old races going 4.5 furlongs on the dirt forever and ever. But today they're running a two-year-old baby race, 5.5 furlongs on the grass. Is that new, or have I just not been paying attention?
No, I think it's the first one ever. They had one colt and one filly. I think the colt race might be tomorrow, but it's the first ones they've ever had. I think it's because there has so much interest for Royal Ascot now with two or three of the trainers, and it gives them a shot to run the horse on the turf before they go there. And I think it's new, but I think it'll stick.
And you have a horse, the first race at Keeneland today, Artos, who's an Ireland bred. Tell us, it looks like, am I wrong? It looks like it's the same connections, or some of the same connections, as your great turf spinner, Leinster. But
yeah, it's the same owners, and she's out of the same family. I think if you check the pedigree, I'm probably be wrong, but I think she's out of a sister to Leinster. And Dunn's and the group, the same group that had Leinster, went out and purchased her. She's a lovely filly, and all her work's been done on the dirt. It's hard to get on the grass, and the family has just been so much turf, we're going to start her there.
Good, good. Yeah, she's by Kodiak, which a lot of people might not recognize, but he's a terrific turf sprinting stallion that stands in Europe. I'm not going to ask you how she's going to do, Mike, because a couple years ago I ran into Jack Bohannon, and how long has Jack been your assistant, Rusty? Forever.
Probably 20 some years, and I'm throwing that right off the top of my head, but it's been a long time.
And so I run into Jack on the backstretch, and Rusty was running some horses Derby week, and I said to Jack, "What, Jack? Tell me, Do you have any shot this week? He said, yeah, we're running, I think it was a maiden, an allowance race, and he said, they'll be right there. He said, the only horse we have in that has no chance is a horse called Funny Duck in the Pat, in the Pat Day Mile. What did Funny Duck pay, Rusty?
I think he went off 70 to 1, 70, 75 to 1, and he caught slop, and he loved it, and he broke a lot of hearts that day, except one lady, you know, the story, and I forgot, I think it was in Omaha or somewhere, she just went in and picked the horse because it was raining and put her ticket together, and I think she came out there with $1 million, picked four, picked six. They wrote a story about her in the paper, but she was the only one that was high on him. But we turned a lot of people sour on us on that one because we didn't like him that much, but he thrived in a slop.
You talk about 70-1 shots, Rusty, and how about, was it Need No More? You won the Ashland in 16, 30-1 shot.
Weep No More.
Weep No More. Yeah. I'm sorry, Weep No More.
Yeah, that was a little different circumstance, though. She was a pretty good filly for a short period of time. She peaked. She had got really good at Tampa, broke her maiden, won a small stake down there. I think the Suncoast. I forgot the name of it. And got here and was doing really well. It was a short field, and I think the four riders, it was only five horses, and they were all concerned about each other. They got in like a four-horse duel on the front end. They all made two moves. They were fighting it out, and we benefited really well. We were the deep closer and got them on a last jump. But she was cut out to be a pretty good horse.
Rusty, we know you don't have an Oaks or Derby horse this year, but we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you for your picks. I know you get to see a lot of those horses train every morning. We were all sick that Shug lost his Derby horse, but who do you like in those two races next weekend?
Well, I'm going to pull for in the Oaks for Pass the Champagne. I actually had that filly for one start, and we were really, really high on her. She trained great. She didn't get away first time out and was second, and she got such a good offer on her. It turned out that we ended up selling her to a group, and it was one of those where they wanted a horse, and they just made a great offer on her. They're great people, and I thought she was going to win the Ashland. She looked like she had it won and got beat a short nose. So I'm probably, because of having her, I'm going to pull for those people. They did a great job with buying her, and they were all above board, did everything the right way. So I'm pulling for her, and I'm pulling for Vicky in the Derby. What the heck? The horse closes every race. He's always there. He runs hard, and I know you hear 100 people say it every year, the race is wide open. It is wide open, and it's whoever's going to show up that day and run their race and gets the trip and likes the mile and a quarter.
Well, Rusty, we really appreciate you joining us this morning, and good luck this afternoon with Artos. I don't think we gave the name of the horse. Good luck. We'll be watching this afternoon.
And Rusty, an old friend of yours, I talked to him this morning, Craig Schutte, was in the feed business up in New York with you. Or not
oh,
with
right.
you. You did
yeah.
business with him. Yeah. Yeah. Well, he and I grew up together, and he's always told some stories about you and the time you guys spent up there. But he said to pass along a hello.
Well, thanks. And say, if you talk back to him, say hello. It's been a few years since I've been out in New York now. Hey, and hey Dan, this is my first chance ever. Get that autograph of Mike Pratt for me, my second favorite player at UK.
I was going
to
say.
I'll put it next to Dan's. You got his for me. I'll put it next to Louis.
tell everybody the pictures, the three. I think you have three pictures on your desk.
Yeah, I do. I have a picture of my wife and I have a picture of my father, and I got a picture of Louis Dampier that Dan got for me.
How about that? We're not going to let Louis live that one down, huh?
Rusty, give Sarah our love, and good luck to this afternoon.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right,
see ya.
Thank you. What a great guy.
Oh, funny.
He is. And I introduced him. When I introduced him, I said horseman, not trainer. And there's a big difference today, Mike. There are not a lot of trainers. There are trainers out there that have their veterinarians training their horses, if you know what I mean.
Well,
and so, Rusty is a true horseman. He takes care of his horses. He waits on his horses when they're not ready. And I thought when I texted Rusty the other day to ask him to come on the show, I thought he still had passed the champagne, because as he said, Malakat was all out to beat her in the Ashland. And I think, I may be wrong, but I think that was past the champagne's first time around two turns. So there's a long shot for you Oaks players, past the champagne.
I love that name. I don't drink champagne, but I do love the name. You know, pass the cold beer and we're okay, right?
You don't like champagne? Why not?
I just you have a little bit, goes a long way with me.
And, that's fair.
You know, yeah, I'm a beer and red wine guy. You know,
I feel that. I'm a beer guy.
You're a beer guy. Yeah,
beer,
yeah.
Scotch, and
I like
whiskey.
A good scotch.
I like scotch.
Yeah,
big scotch man.
Yeah, what's your favorite scotch?
I mean, I like Tomatin. I like Glenfiddich.
Never heard of Tomatin.
I like, because I'm poor, I like Johnny Walker Black. I mean, that's always a staple.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Johnny Walker Red is like paint thinner, though. I can't do that.
Really?
Nah.
Well, I can't afford Johnny Walker Black. So, you know, I mean, that's, what about the first two?
You never heard of Glenfiddich?
Oh, yeah. I know that one in the price range that would be in, but the first one you totally threw a
Tomatin. I stumbled upon it a couple of years ago. It was a gift, and it's finished in sherry casks. It's like 18 years old. It's very good.
And you can buy that locally?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Tomatin.
What does it taste like? Similar to?
Sherry. It's finished in sherry cask. Very, very heavy cocoa notes on it. It's very easy to drink.
I'll be taking a look. Process. He's like Perrin Johnson. Perrin Johnson can whip that red wine, or particularly wines and red wines. Process now, our Scotch guy. Our Scotch guy. What about our Twitter poll, Mr. Process?
All right, so currently 50 people have responded. A few good men running away with it. 56% of people saying a few good men, and then followed by 24% saying The Shining, and then Cuckoo's Nest is 14%, and Something's Got to Give It 6.
Ooh, you're such a beating.
Oh, man.
Man, you might be the only person in Louisville that likes that movie, right?
we were talking about that filly that Rusty trained for me, Miss Blueprint. And we bought that, two partners and I bought that filly in Lexington. And she was at the old Exarban racetrack. Exarban is Nebraska, spelled backwards.
David Vance.
And it was in Omaha. It no longer exists. But she was a two-year-old, and we got a call from the trainer one morning. And he says, our filly just worked in 58-4. For 5 furlongs, that for any horse, that's great. For a two-year-old filly, it's unbelievable. He said, but only I and the clocker know it. He said the clocker put down 102 or something like that for the workout.
Clockers do that? They really do?
You don't think they make their living sitting out there at 5 o'clock in the morning with a stopwatch, do you? So we enter her. And she's 12-1 on the morning line. And so our partners and I fly to Omaha, and we've got this all planned out. Where one of us is going to bet win in place, one of us is going to bet exactas, trifectas. We're going to make a killing. First switch of the board, she goes to 4-5 from a 12-1 morning
line. Had some friends, right?
So I don't even know. I don't even remember if we bet her. She wound up going off like 7-5, won by 6 lengths. And so we were all pleased with that, even though we didn't get to cash a bet. But we go back to the barn after the races to see the filly and to talk to the trainer. And the trainer from the other side of the barn comes around and he says, Joe, how come you didn't tell me about that filly? And Joe says, well, you know, we trained her all winter, and we had some expenses in her, and we were going to try to cash a bet and make some money. And the guy says, that's all right. I stopped at the gas station and filled up this morning, and the cashier told me about her. Only the trainer and the clocker knew she'd work in 58, and everybody else in Omaha.
If you have a relationship with a clocker at Keeneland or at Churchill, you could get some pretty valuable information. No
question. See, I never ask a trainer, like, you know, Rusty gave us the information he wanted to give us on that horse. They are the worst handicappers in the world. They'll tell you to bet on something like Funny Duck. You know, the horse, he said, the only horse we have that has no chance is Funny Duck. But those clockers, they know what's going on. They watch those horses, and they will give you some good information, much better than the trainers will give you.
The one trainer I can remember, the late Forrest Kalin, and Forrest was pretty good. Now, he didn't, you know, at one time he had a barn full of horses.
Right.
But then he got older and kind of slowed down for him. But he would come with some things. He's one of the few trainers that I thought, you know, he would, when he ran, he was great at spotting, which Rusty's great at not. I would guess there's information circulating at the track, mm-hmm. that if you go back to that circle start, it's from a trainer, and it's never very good.
No,
right?
No. And I figure if I'm going to lose my money, I'm not going to lose it by taking somebody else's information or some tip. I'm going to lose it because I just made some bad decisions handicapping. So tomorrow will be closing day at Keeneland, Saturday night, opening night at Churchill. So for all those horse racing fans, it's the start of a big week.
It certainly is. And we're going to catch a break now, process, and after the break, coming out, we will have Kyle Macy, UK All-American, and he's got a book coming out, Dan, and one of the first portal babies. I mean, Kyle transferred from Purdue to Kentucky. He avoided the portal. I said that in jest. He avoided the portal, but he would have gone through the portal if it would have happened now. He would have had to.
And without a doubt, the best transfer Kentucky's ever gotten.
I would say so. I would agree with that. All right. Well, let's come back after the top of the hour with Kyle Macy. This is Sports Talk with Dan.
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 per hour plus a $175 weekly bonus for some shifts. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Bet River Sportsbook has supercharged its iOS app. Download the update today from the Apple App Store and see the difference for yourself. Must be 21 or over to play. Playable only in Indiana. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT.